Support for this podcast and the following message come from KUST Campus Radio, a student-operated, non-commercial radio station. KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at mixler.com/KUST-radio. Welcome to the first episode of The Medium, a new podcast presented by Tommy Media that's all about what's happening in the art and entertainment world. On today's show, we have our first staff pick with our production editor, sit down with Bailey LePage to talk about slam poetry, and discuss Disney's surge of live-action movies. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Medium. We have our production editor and our producer, Althea Larson, in with us today. Althea, how are you doing?
I'm good, Maddie. I'm excited for our first show, first episode.
Me too. It's exciting.
Adding some more podcasts into Tommy Media. It's exciting.
It is. So I would like to talk with you about Avengers Endgame, which comes out, I believe, technically tomorrow night or Thursday night for anyone when this comes out. And you said you're going to go see it opening weekend, right?
Yeah, I'm going this upcoming Sunday. So, what is that? The
28th?
Yeah, I'm seeing it the 28th after our little meeting. I don't know if I'm ready.
Have you always been a big fan of the MCU and the Marvel movies and
I'm
characters?
Not, like, diehard fan. Like, I don't know if I could tell you, like, every fact that happens. But it's definitely, like, one of those movies that, or one of those, universes where like I just remember like watching so many of the movies with like my family, like because we would do these Friday like pizza movie nights and like there was always like a new Avengers movie that we would get on DVD and watch. I like can't tell you how many times I've seen the Iron Man movies. Like
Iron Man movies classic.
I know. In sophomore year of high school I like bought myself like a Thor t-shirt like from Hot Topic, of course. Like
oh, Hot Topic.
Yeah, so I'm really excited. I'm excited and sad, and it's just a whole, it's bittersweet.
It's the end of an era, right? It is. The, like, main six is kind of their last hurrah sort of thing.
I know. It'll be good. I don't know. I'm not, it's going to be, like, a weekend of dying. I feel like, we have Game of Thrones this weekend,
oh,
and everyone's going to die in that. And
everyone's
then we're gonna
so
have
nervous.
Avengers, and everyone's going to die there.
I saw a joke on Twitter that was, someone said that, their mom yelled, oh no, the Starks are gonna die. And they're like, which one? Because you got Tony and then you got the Stark family.
I know, God.
So much
all
going
on. All the Starks.
On. Oh. I'm not super big into superhero movies. I did see Infinity War last year when it came out. But this year, I'm not entirely sure what Endgame is about. Do you know kind of what they're gonna be wrapping up in this movie? Or is it completely unknown because of the spoiler, no spoiler thing?
I kind of hate reading, like, synopsis of movies, like when I like if I know I'm already gonna want to go see it, then I like don't want to read the synopsis because you kind of have expectations.
Definitely.
So I'm like, I mean, they're obviously like the great battle with Thanos is gonna happen, and they have to wrap it up.
Who's gonna die?
This is gonna be a really I don't even know. It's like a 3-hour-long movie.
That's crazy.
Like, I don't even know what's
gonna
happen.
Is it true that they're doing an intermission, or is
I don't know.
I thought I heard that, but maybe not.
There's been 3-hour-long movies before.
That's true.
Like, I think I saw The Hobbit, and that was, like, 3 hours long.
Those are very long.
And there was no intermission in the movie theater, so I don't know. But I'm going with a bunch of my guy friends on Sunday. We actually just saw, what was it, Shazam? Was that the last? I think that was a DC one that.
Maybe? I don't know.
I think it was called just Shazam, and that was a DC one, but it was. It was so, like, Marvel-esque. That's, like, how
really?
I've been describing it. Because DC is always so dark and gloomy and drama.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know. I've never been a fan of DC because I'm just like, okay, I'm bored. I end up on my phone at some point in the movie.
Sure.
But, like, I was like, okay, this is very upbeat, like, funny, bright. Is this really a
turn.
DC? I had to relook, like, are we sure this is a DC movie? This felt like it was like an event, like not Avengers, but like Marvel add-on. I don't know.
Well, Marvel movie, at least the ones that I've seen, since the first few of them, they've taken such a comedic turn.
Yeah.
That at this point is half the movie. It's the action and the comedy of
it.
Which, I mean, I think it makes it more entertaining because it isn't as humdrum, gotta save the world. It does add like a sense of lightness to it, which I feel like those movies are supposed to be about fun and the action of it in the first place.
It brings a little bit more humanity to superheroes.
Definitely.
In my opinion.
For sure.
So yeah, very excited.
Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Oh.
I hope that you don't cry too much or that it's a good movie and it does bring some closure to people who've been fans for the past 10 years.
I just saw a tweet that, so the Marvel movies are known to do their end credit scenes.
Yes.
Well, they do like mid-credit scene and then they do like an end credit scene. And it gives like little hints of what's to come next. And there was, I saw a tweet from MCU saying that, actually, I don't know if it was like the verified MCU account. It might have been just an update account. But saying that there was apparently not going to be an end scene or a mid scene.
Oh.
And I'm just like, but I'm still going to sit and
wait. You know people are going to be waiting.
I don't know if you're lying. I don't know. Just in case.
Oh, yeah. People will be sitting in that theater till the end, just in case.
Just as always. Oh, my gosh. Last summer when Infinity War came out, I went with my two roommates, and they did not believe that there was going to be an end credit for, they like said that they were huge Avengers fans and all that stuff, but then they were like, there's no end credit, and I'm like, have you really seen the movie?
Really? So you would know. I know that.
Yeah, and I'm sitting in the movie theater and like waiting for the credits to end, and they get up and leave and go and wait outside. They're like, there's not an end credit scene. I'm like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. They came in and were like taking Snapchats of me sitting and waiting, and then it came on and I was like, let's see here.
Told you. I know, for the few that I've seen, I never understand them because they're always references to other movies, and I have seen very few of those movies.
Yeah.
But I saw the end credit scene for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse when that came out this past winter. Mm-hmm. Best end credit scene I've ever seen. It was amazing. It was totally worth waiting for.
They're always so fun. I was watching, because I don't know, like, too much. Like, I didn't read the comics or anything, so I don't really know, but I saw Captain Marvel when that came out, and that was really good. And then she has this little, like, pager thing. And then I was like, watching, and I was like, oh, my God, the end credits from Infinity War makes sense now. Captain Marvel's going to come back.
Because it's like a pager, right?
Now everyone knows that, like, now. And I'm sure that was, like, already announced, and I was like, there's the connection.
Like, to me, it makes sense. That's all that matters.
I get it. But yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, again, best of luck in seeing that.
Thank you.
I will ask you for spoilers. You probably won't tell me them. I might just have to go see it myself. But
you might just have to. All right.
All right. We're here to interview slam poet and St. Thomas student Bailey LePage. Bailey, welcome to our show.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm pretty great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Excited. This is our first episode. We're going to get it going. So you are a slam poet or spoken word poet.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that art form is?
Yeah. So it's a great blend between, I like to describe it, between theater and poetry. So a lot of people also call it performance poetry. It can take several forms. A lot of people think of slam poetry competitions and, you know, artists get up on stage and bare their souls to audiences and get judged and scored on it, which is a great but also terrible time.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I can imagine with the emotional side of it, but then also having to realize that you are going to be judged for it, kind of.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So do you compete in competitions then?
Every once in a while. I do the one that is hosted by St. Thomas during National Poetry Week. I've never performed in, but I've gone to Button Poetry, which is in St. Paul, Minneapolis. They have a YouTube channel. They're a huge kind of platform for some spoken word poets. I think one of the popular ones is Neil Hilborn, who does the OCD poem. If you've ever like seen it float around Facebook, that's what he does. But I've gone to their shows, but I've never gotten up and competed yet.
Right. But what goes into preparing for a competition? Like, how do you pick one of your works to do?
Oh, goodness. Well, the way that I write is by speaking them. So I will just, I'm a insomniac, so I will just sit up in my room and just talk out words. And sometimes they come naturally, other times they just kind of are forced more so. Mm-hmm. And it'll come in a way of just talking to walls. and when I pick one that I have a rhythm for and I have a love for, then I'm usually like, okay, that is the one that we're going to do. That's the one that feels the most comfortable and most kind of like in your bones.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So when you start to write, when you kind of said you brainstorm just by talking out loud with mm-hmm. it, is that more of a inspiration kind of process or literally working through it until something kind of spurs up?
I would definitely say it's both. Sometimes things just come to you or come to me mm-hmm. in terms of just like, oh, I have this one line and that's where it sticks. And
definitely.
Then it's like, okay, what works with it rhythmically? What do I feel the most comfortable saying next and saying next after that and after that? So it's both like an aha inspiration and also just a what feels comfortable, what muddles through sort of thing.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I know a lot of slam poets sometimes they'll work a lot with rhyme scheme or meter, but then some are more free verse style. Do you have one particular that you like to work within, or?
Definitely free verse. Mm-hmm. I cannot rhyme to save my life. as much as I have an appreciation for things like hip hop and rap, which is a lot of what rhyming poetry comes for, cannot do it myself. Cannot for the life of me. I don't think I'm as spontaneously creative enough to manifest those things, but I have a great love for it, for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned a few minutes ago about Slam Poetry Week here at St. Mm-hmm. Thomas. They did an event where they had three poets come in, G. Yamazawa, Jasmine Mann, excuse me, and Dinez Smith. Were you able to go to this event?
Yeah, I was.
What did you think of it?
Oh, that was incredible. I had only ever heard of G. Yamazawa, mm-hmm. and he was incredible. They were all incredible. I really appreciated especially Dinez Smith, who's a queer poet of color, especially mm-hmm. in having that kind of perspective, and they were so funny. Like, that was one thing that I love so much, is that... And all three of them had very different styles.
For sure, definitely.
Where, like, G was much more the, like, artist kind of hip-hop sort of person, where he was just very much about, like, audience engagement and, like, having fun and kind of making it a show. And then Dinez Smith, who is both, like, comedian and poet.
Definitely.
I don't think I've laughed harder than in their set, where I was just like, I don't know what you're saying. It's so funny to me.
Yeah.
And then Jasmine Mann's just, like, the tone completely shifted. It was just so, like, you know, she didn't really address the audience very much. And there were some times where I couldn't tell whether she was, you know, saying a poem or if she was talking to the audience and just kind of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
They were all incredible. The event was spectacularly put on, too.
Yeah, I remember Jasmine Mann specifically, she was so just very still in how she was presenting things. And like you said, she didn't really interact with the audience as much, mm-hmm. which was such a change from G. Yamazawa earlier that night.
Right.
And so you kind of had this huge spectrum. And I guess, again, it goes to show how diverse slam poets can mm-hmm. be, with G. Yamazawa doing more of the rap, rhymey, musical style. And then Jasmine Mann's having a more traditional poetry sense, what you'd think it would be.
Right.
And Dinez Smith almost kind of working in the middle of them, because they had some fun ones, but then also some more serious ones mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. Is, other than Slam Poetry Week, is there a community here at St. Thomas for slam poets?
I think it exists. I don't think we all get together and, like, have lunch every week, you know, but I definitely think that it does exist, and you see them, especially in Slam Poetry Week, in that competition at the end of the week, and they're recurring kind of actors who come up and mm-hmm. do slam, and, you know, this is only my second year, but it's been really cool to see what stays the same in that kind of rotation of people, and, mm-hmm. you know, who graduates, who comes on, who's a first year, who comes in,
sure,
things like that. But I definitely think it exists. I don't think there's much of a platform for people at St. Thomas, mm-hmm. other than Poetry Week sometimes, but I think we all... Also, I just think poets are solitary creatures to begin with. Yeah. I really think if we got into a room together, we'd all just be like, well, I don't know.
What do we do now?
What do we do? How do we talk not in metaphor? things like that.
Because
so.
I feel like it'd be kind of fun to at least have a day or a day of the month where everyone could come together, and whether that is like just perform something for fun or let's workshop some things. But also, I feel like this art is very individual. Like everyone has their own spin to it.
For sure.
So it might just be a good thing to maybe look into starting up, but just so everyone knows that we all exist and there's multiple people out here doing it other than just in Slam Poetry Week.
For sure.
Do you have a favorite poet or artist?
Ooh, goodness. This is hard. I
gotta give you the hard questions.
There are three that I always think of, and they're all button poetry poets. And it's Neil Hilborn, Blythe Baird, and Sabrina Benaim.
Cool.
And all three of them really talk about mental health and mental illness a lot, which I appreciate and love. And actually, last year at Slam Poetry Week, Neil Hilborn was the poet that came and performed.
Oh, awesome.
And I was so starstruck. I was just like,
like, I can't function.
I was just like sitting in the back row, and he's, of course, can't go without talking about Texas. He's also from Texas.
Perfect.
And he said something about Houston, and I was like, Houston. He's like, yeah, I don't like it either. And I was like, he's like, are you from Texas? And I was like, yeah, I'm from San Antonio. He's like, ah, the better city. And I was like, correct.
Gotta represent.
Yeah, for sure.
What are their styles like? Or do their styles influence how you write at all?
I definitely think they definitely do influence me because I watch their content so much.
Sure.
So it's hard to not be influenced by them. It's hard to talk about how their styles are without like prior knowledge of them. Especially Neil Hilborn's is like, he either talks super, super fast or is really just, like, slow.
Sure.
And very, like, methodical with his words and things like that. And both Blythe Baird and Sabrina Benaim are, I call them free-floating energy, I guess. They're just very calm and very, but also very fiery. Blythe Baird especially. She has a poem called Pocket-Sized Feminism. And it's just very, like, visceral and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I love them all
nice.
So much. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So kind of a random question.
Okay.
There are talent competitions on TV. Like, America's Got Talent, X Factor. Well, I don't know about X Factor, but America's Got Talent's the main one I can think of. I've never seen a slam poet, spoken word poet on there before. I've seen rappers and other singers.
Yeah.
But never slam poetry. Do you think that is a platform that could be expanded on?
I think in a way it is, but it would take a form that you wouldn't necessarily like look at it and be like, oh, that's slam poetry. Bringing up another poet, her name is Andrea Gibson, and she does a lot of albums of her poetry over music.
That's
and
kinda
so
cool.
It's like they're not really songs, but they're not fully poems either. Mm-hmm. They're a really good blend. And that is about the only way I could see that an audience would receive that in that kind of setting.
Mm-hmm.
Or thinking of like America's Got Talent or anything like that, where like judges would receive that in that way. Because, you know, having a person get up there and tell jokes is one thing. Having a person get up there and just, like, speak poetry into a microphone in a crowd that is not prepared for a person to speak poetry into a microphone might not work out very well. But
I guess also considering that slam poetry can be so personal and heavy, too. Like, it can cover some really deep subject matter. And not saying, like, you would hate for someone to go on there and refrain from doing poems that they want to do because they're scared of how the audience will receive it or just how it'll play out in that setting. I'm sure it could lead to like a big break sort of thing, but I also don't know how big the world of slam poetry is in that sense of a career. Like, I know some poets will publish books of their poems.
Right.
But performing them, it's more kind of just going around here and there.
Yeah, doing tours, doing YouTube channels, things mm-hmm. like that. I think it's much more suited for small platform kind of ideas because a lot of poets are like, are more authors of publishing than, or authors of published works than they are necessarily slam poets.
Sure.
And then some like G. Yamazawa go on to a completely different track of doing hip hop and mm-hmm, doing mm-hmm. More like fast rap other thing. And, you know, there have been other examples of that. George Watsky is another one. Love him so much. His lyrics are tattooed on my arm, so nice. I love him a lot. Nice. And stuff like that. So I think slam poetry in general is more suited to small audiences unless you go in kind of the musical route in of itself.
Sure, yeah. Definitely. All right, Bailey. Well, thank you
for coming.
Thank you. If you would like to read one of your poems, that would be amazing.
For sure.
So Bailey is going to be reading Cathedral for us.
I have walked in a cathedral long since abandoned by its own faith. I have felt the facade of rock and holy temple crash to soft earth. A palace left ravaged, but the rainfall has soothed all the wounds of fallout. The air is thick with heavy hearts and lost prayers and sticky mildew. I walk barefoot on overgrown grass where pews once sat in attentive rows. If you listen, you can still hear the peaceful old organ, now all rust and splinters. I can still catch that beautiful choir in the background of nostalgia. I call this place a temple and a body and mine.
So good.
Thanks.
Love the images you use and just the whole feel of it. That's so good. And it changes it when you get to hear it instead of just reading it.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Bailey.
Yeah,
it was
thank
wonderful
you so
having
much.
Here.
Fantastic.
All right, that was a great interview with Bailey. And now my co-host Reed Neeser and I are going to talk about the surge in Disney live action remakes. Beauty and the Beast came out in 2017, followed by Christopher Robin last year, Dumbo this year, and then later this year will be Aladdin, The Lion King, and later in 2020 will be Mulan. So Reed, what's up with all these live action remakes?
I mean, clearly it's just kind of, it seems initially like it's a cash grab.
Sure.
They're bound to make at least a couple hundred million dollars off of each remake. The problem is, does this kind of diminish their credibility as mm-hmm. filmmakers? Because some of these movies, like Beauty and the Beast, for instance, I grew up watching that.
Definitely.
I knew it by heart, and it was almost treasured for me or many other kids. Mm-hmm. And to have it kind of dug up and remade seems a little, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it, and I loved the live-action remake. I think it looks beautiful. It was very well done. But then I also don't know why it was necessary, per se, and I know they added some new content to it, but what they added to me didn't add anything to the story.
Like it didn't feel worth
right.
the effort.
It's like they added it just to make it a little bit longer runtime and to say that it's a new movie and to give a reason to, but other than that, it just didn't feel new in the sense that I think they were hoping it to. And then, I mean, I saw Christopher Robin as well, and that was a little different storyline than original Winnie the Pooh stories. But even so, I would have rather have seen something new that they created than rehashing some old characters.
Yeah, and it's not necessary for Disney especially to be remaking stuff. This mm-hmm. seems like almost like a last resort move in order to stay afloat financially.
Sure, sure.
But Disney has so many properties and has just acquired a bunch more. If you don't know, they recently just bought out Fox,
mm-hmm,
so they
mm-hmm.
have just a ton more franchises to dig into, and they're not exactly hurting for money, you know?
Right. I mean, maybe part of it is since they bought that out, they have to find a way to make up the money that they just spent on buying up Fox and some other properties. So maybe these are, like you said, easy ways to bring money in to kind of build that back up before diving into new projects that might not necessarily sell as well as other ones.
It's an interesting thought. I didn't think of that. I always figured that is an investment, and the Fox deal would is a guaranteed, you know, moneymaker. But no, you make a good point. They just because they have these new franchises doesn't mean they'll make money or they'll do well. So I guess having a financial cushion in case they don't is not a bad idea.
Right. My only concern with it is not only are these live action ones coming out so often, but also the big projects that are coming out later this year are Toy Story 4 and Frozen 2, which are highly anticipated, but they're also just sequels of a series that's already been going on. And to me, that's also just rehashing some of the same things. Even though they'll probably be very good, and I've heard that they should be good.
There's still sequels.
But there's still sequels, exactly. There's no new content, per se, coming out of that company.
That is, yeah, it's curious. I wonder if it's not just this this company, too. Like, you don't see a lot of other major companies bringing out fresh, original ideas. Like, I think Terminator is getting a reboot. And
why?
Yeah, exactly. Terminator is getting a reboot, and no one's asking for that, but cash grab, or not cash grab, but it's...
They know they'll get something off of it.
Exactly. If it's a name that people recognize, it's a guaranteed audience, whether the movie's good or not. I mean...
Look at all the Fast and Furious movies.
Exactly.
They're not the greatest.
Thank you,
like
yes.
There's like 8 of them now or something. I don't think I've seen a single one.
Yeah.
But... They're just
continues
it seems
to
be
draw
the same
an
thing.
Audience.
Yeah, exactly. And they know they're going to make that revenue off of it.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think this diminishes the credibility as like filmmakers, as creatives?
I'm not sure because it is such a big company, and there are so many different people. Like obviously they have Pixar and Marvel, and now the Star Wars franchise, and so there's still a lot of outlets for creators to be there. And I still think. Like with Beauty and the Beast specifically, it was a beautifully made movie with the animation there and the set design and the costume. So that side of creativity is still there. But I think it goes back to the original ideas, or at least new films aren't being made. And that's more of a stretch in creativity than I think some of these remakes and sequels are not allowing filmmakers to do.
I see. Okay.
So it's a little bit of both. Like they are creative in some sense because they're still making movies obviously that are fairly well made,
and there's room to be creative and
right
each property too.
Yeah, but then it's also just I was never like a diehard Disney person, but I can appreciate a good Disney movie in the theater and at home on a rainy day, but I still want to see something new come out of that and not like we've been saying, not these old things. One thing though, with the live action, they all have extremely high build actors coming on in them. Beauty and the Beast had Emma Watson. I know, I think Christopher Robin had Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor, that's the name.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yes. And then I know Aladdin has Will Smith, I think.
Which is, yeah, our
which
good.
Is Will
huge
Smith.
Name.
Like, okay. And then The Lion King has Beyonce,
yep.
I think is Nala. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know about Mulan yet, but those are all huge names, which are going to bring in even more revenue, I feel like, if you're just a fan of them in general.
Yeah.
And seeing that this huge person is supporting this movie.
I see Will Smith in just about anything.
Wouldn't everyone? Yeah. Like, it's Will Smith. It's so cool. The only thing, though, is I really liked Robin Williams in the original Aladdin.
It's going to be hard to fill those shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also think Will Smith is definitely qualified to do it.
You just needed really just... someone with a lot of character and a lot of personality. You don't need to replicate that.
Right. Everyone respects Robin Williams.
Yeah, I think it's safe to go somewhere a little different, but they had to be, big personality.
Mm-hmm. So. Also, the actress that's going to be playing Jasmine was in the Disney movie Lemonade Mouth.
And I didn't notice.
Okay. And I just found that out a few days ago, and I kind of freaked out because I love Lemonade Mouth so much. And I'm like, yes, she's getting the movie she deserves. It's great. So, I mean, I am excited for that, and I'm definitely going to see it, which totally seems to contradict what we've been saying. But it also is like, yeah, we're going to go see it, so that furthers our point.
If anything, it's one of those... It's one of those too-big-to-fail movies, whereas they're putting up putting so much effort into it that it doesn't seem like it'd be a fail. It'd be a big fail. And if it would fail, it'd be colossal to where it's almost you have to see it for the sake of seeing something fail, which sounds horrible.
It sounds horrible.
But, yeah.
If, and I don't think they'll fail. But, yeah, I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on just Disney in general and kind of where they're going with?
I'm interested to see. It doesn't really relate to the live-action remakes, but I'm interested to see where their Fox acquisition goes. They acquired a lot of properties, some of which are, like, rated R. So making those movies, I hear that they plan to stay on the rated R track. Like, they're not going to deviate from the...
to make it more family-friendly, more Disney image.
Exactly. They bought some of those movies for the sake of expanding into the non-family-friendly area. So I'm interested to see where that goes. As for remakes, I'm definitely seeing Lion King because I've seen the original Lion King about 20 times. So
The Lion King's a classic.
And I think that's our final point.
They know that people will see it because it's a classic.
Exactly. It's a guaranteed pull. It doesn't have to be good, but
I'm sure it will be great. My only problem with The Lion King is they're going from one form of animation to another form of animation.
That seems
a
little...
And so to me, I'm like, you can't call it a live-action movie if it's still all animated.
I want to see actual lions in that
movie.
Yeah.
That's...
They better be acting.
If they make a third version, actual lions.
Yes, there you go.
I think that's...
Technology will catch up.
They'll get there.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good note to end on. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Reed, for talking with me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. For Reed Neisser and Althea Larson, I'm Maddie Peters, and we'll see you next time.